Good morning. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. Learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. And in our opening portion of the program today, we will be talking about the Boston Red Sox and their organization with Chris Hatfield. And Chris is the executive director of a terrific website, SoxProspects.com. And Chris, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
It's always a pleasure, Ken. Great to be back on up in the
6-0. You got that. The top three prospects right now in the Red Sox organization, as listed this morning on SoxProspects.com, are all with the Portland Sea Dogs. Roman Anthony, outfielder, shortstop Marcelo Meyer, and catcher Kyle Teal. How are those three progressing at the AA level this year?
Yeah, well, it's funny. We knew that Portland team was going to be pretty special, and Baseball America recently, I think, listed it as the number two best minor league affiliate in the game right now. So if you're up there in the area and can catch Portland up in Maine, or maybe when they come through Manchester, I would highly advise folks to do so. It's a really special club. To start the year, look, you know, it's interesting because we think it's April 30th. We're a month in. You got to keep in mind that, you know, guys at that affiliate, put it this way, Roman Anthony has played all of 18 games. So we're looking at an extremely small sample size. That said, you know, the best of the three so far has been Meyer. He's been really hot out the gate. He's hitting .315, a couple of home runs. He's doing pretty well. You know, Anthony and Teal have gotten off to a bit slower starts. They're kind of down more around the Mendoza line at the moment. But nothing I'm worried about in either direction yet. You know, I'm not going to get too high on what Meyer's doing or too low on what Anthony or Teal's doing. Look at what Anthony did last year. He was extremely nondescript after the first month. He had about a .250 slugging percentage. But, you know, once we got our eyes on some of the underlying metrics, the exit velocity, the swing decisions, things like that, it was clear that he was doing something right and just needed some balls to fall in. And sure enough, he took off not too soon thereafter. Pretty soon thereafter. So with these guys, I think they're, you know, getting used to the level. I know they were all there last year for some amount of time, but Anthony and Teal weren't there for very long, and Meyer didn't play a single healthy game at the AA level last year. So at this point, I'm just looking for them to have a strong first half with that club. And, you know, maybe if they're pushing around the All-Star break or something or sometime thereafter, they could go up to Worcester. But I think the Red Sox are going to let those guys marinate and take their time because it's too important to rush them. You know, you look at what happened with the Baltimore Orioles and Jackson Holliday.
Right. Yep.
So, you know, he goes back down to AAA, and it's clear that they rushed him. So I think it's been, you know, it's going to take some time to let them marinate there and see what's going on. But for now, it's just kind of let them play, get every day at bats, and get used to the level, and we'll check in on them in another month or two to see how the numbers look. But, you know, we're not even close to the point where those numbers will kind of even out.
Now, how is Marcelo Meyer's health these days? Is he 100%?
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, he's got 17 games this year. He's out there every day. He's leading, I think he's in second for that team behind Anthony. You know, they're hitting him, Anthony, Meyer, Teal, 1-2-3. You know, he seems healthy at this point. The numbers show it. He looked it when we saw him in camp fielding the ball. He's out at shortstop regularly. So, yeah, seems like all systems go on his health.
Now, he's only 21, although it seems to Red Sox Nation that he's been around for a long time. And here he is, still at AA, you know. it does. I mean, I know he was drafted at, 18? But it seems like he's been a part of the organization for a long time.
Well, it's Meyer, actually. They drafted him in 2021 at age 18. You know, it's interesting the way guys progress now. You know, he started his first full season in 2022 in Salem, split it between there and Greenville, and he had injury issues that year as well. You know, and I think that's something that's worth watching from him. One thing that I really want from him this year is to play a full season healthy.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing we're really going to want to keep our eyes on. You know, last year it was the shoulder injury. The year before, it was, you know, I think it was an ankle and a wrist. He just kind of dinged up. He had a wrist sprain in the middle of the year. I wanted to get through a season healthy, and that's really what it is, and that's part of why it seems like, oh, well, he's only in Portland. But, you know, I'm fine with him being only in Portland. You know, we get questions about, well, Jordan Lawler is pushing the majors. It's like, well, prospect development is not always linear. In fact, it rarely is. And so I have no problem with where he's at. He can move quick if he really takes off. I think, you know, all three of those guys were looking at 2025 at some point as an ETA. Just a matter of when, based on what they do this year and start next.
Yeah, and you know that you well know that many of the top prospects in baseball these days are in Double A, and in some cases, mm-hmm. the level of competition at Double A can be higher than it is at Triple A.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because if you look at the Red Sox system this year, their Triple A team in Worcester is mostly MLB depth. Minor league free agent signing types.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. guys like yeah. we saw Romy Gonzalez already, and they've got a slew of other types like that. Eddie Alvarez, Mark Contreras, Dalton Guthrie. You know, we saw Tyler Heineman, who's a little different because he was on the 40-man roster, but I think that's on purpose because they knew they might need some reinforcements based on what happened at the major league level. Maybe not quite this. I don't think you ever predict what's happened with them health-wise at the major league level this year, but I think they knew they would probably need to dip into that. But it is kind of funny, since the you know, since Major League Baseball sort of got rid of short season ball, which folks will remember the little spinners being that level for the Red Sox system, it has kind of extended out downward the talent levels at each level. And A-ball, really, we see the Red Sox really push guys through A-ball because if you're of a certain talent level or maturity, you're going to blow through those levels and they're just not going to be challenging for you. So if a lot of guys will get questions, oh, well, this guy or that guy is really dominating at low A or even high A, and we just have to say, wait till they get to Double A, because that's when we're really going to find out. And, you know, sometimes guys swim and sometimes guys sink at that level. So that's really the precipice of being able to really evaluate these guys is that Double A level.
Yeah, absolutely. I know your new rankings are going to be coming out very shortly, since mm-hmm. two of the top 10 prospects, Seydon Rafaela and Willier Abreu, are already making significant contributions to the Red Sox. So those two will be out of the top 10. So there's going to be a shakeup in your top 10 prospects.
There is, yeah, and I think that's probably going to be the extent of the shakeup 1 month in. You know, when you look at, like, I kind of mentioned the sample size a little bit. You know, guys are at 75, maybe 80 by the time we update plate appearances. I'm not really looking to move guys around too much. You know, sometimes guys get off the slow starts. Look at, you know, the top pitcher on that Portland roster is Wickelman Gonzalez, a starter who his first two or three starts were just abysmal, terrible, right? I mean, really couldn't have gone worse. But they came back, and a couple weeks ago, they threw him in three innings in relief on Sunday to make sure to kind of get him back on the horse. You know, he hadn't gotten out of the first inning on his Tuesday start. So on Sunday, they said, you know what? We want you to get back on the horse. We want you to get back in the water. You know, and it went well. And then last week, he had a really great start. So that's part of why we don't want to overreact to small sample sizes. So I think other than those two graduating, David Hamilton's probably also going to graduate. We'll see. I don't know if he gets sent down today when they activate Vaughn Grissom, if that'll affect whether or not he graduates or not. But, yeah, I think we'll have guys moving up. It's going to be interesting because I think you lose two top 10 guys and the system looks a lot different, right? Guys that were 12 are now in the top 10. You know, guys that were outside of the top 20 are now in the top 20. It'll be a little different to look at, but there are some guys having good starts that may move up a little bit. You know, Case Mydroth is a guy in Worcester who's off to a pretty good start, at least on base-wise. We'd like to see a little more pop out of him. You know, Blaze Jordan has really turned it on lately on that Portland roster, you know, who kind of gets overshadowed by the big three. He might maybe move up a spot or two. But, you know, this ranking, I think, will kind of keep things mostly status quo unless we see something in underlying data that really excites or disappoints us. And we'll see where things go for another month or so before we shake things up too much.
Now, people are going to have an opportunity to see the Portland Sea Dogs in Manchester in the early part of July. In fact, their first appearance will be July the 4th. And I know there's going to be fireworks after that game. So an interesting team to watch for sure, the Portland Sea Dogs. And we talked about Rafaela and Willier Abreu. Rafaela got off to a very slow start. And the Red Sox, very early in the year, awarded him with for someone of his lack of experience on the big league level, a mm-hmm. huge contract.
They did. And, you know, I don't want to say I don't like locking up guys long-term, right? Because that's a good thing to try and do. I do wonder a little bit about the value that the Red Sox get out of that deal. You know, we were kind of gabbing a little bit about this before when we were sound checking, Ken, as you know. But Rafaela didn't strike me as the type of guy that I would be super, super interested in locking up long term. You know, I think when you're looking at the average annual value, yeah, okay, you could save some money down the line. Locking him in, I think it's like a $6.6 million or some odd average annual value. And that's good for a guy that if you know, you think he's going to be a part of your major league club for a long time. And certainly with his defense, we've seen the impact of Rafaela so far already this year. Early in the year, what he was able to bring in center, where he's probably at least a double-plus defender. And now with the ability to move from center field to shortstop, which is something that I could think of maybe one other guy in the game that's done that recently, and I'm not going to say his name so not to give anyone PTSD here, but, you know, I mean, that's huge when you have a guy that can go play at least an average, if not above average, shortstop once he really gets his feet under him. That's great, and it clearly the Red Sox are prioritizing that defense. That said, I'm concerned about what we're seeing from him at the plate. He was chasing, last time I checked, at close to a 40% rate, one of the highest, if not the highest, I think, rates in baseball. That's his bugaboo, and he needs to work on that. And look, if he can play an above-average shortstop, I'm cool hitting him ninth and dealing with it, right? As long as you got the rest of the lineup in shape where they can hit, you can carry that. You know, if he's playing an all-world center field, maybe you can kind of carry that. I'd like to see a little more out of him with what they give him as a contract. You know, look, he's making, I think, like 10-ish or $13 million. I think $10 million his first year free agency they bought out, $13 million in the second year they bought out. That's not a huge savings in today's money, but, you know, maybe by that point we're talking, what, 20, 30? Maybe that is a pretty significant savings based on where the CBT is at that point. So, you know, it wasn't a contract I looked at and was immediately like, yep, immediate win, great job. But that said, you know, is it something that's going to hamstring him? Probably not, but, you know, you look at it, like, when you get everyone back and you're healthy, is he a guy that you maybe would have wanted to send to AAA for a little bit to get some seasoning or something? Maybe, but now you definitely can't. You're not going to do that with a guy that you just signed to an extension. So he's locked in on the major league roster.
Chris,
going forward.
Chris, I'm sorry. We got to break to a commercial.
We got to break. Chris, hang in there. We'll be right back. All right?
Sounds good.
Kale & Company continues after these words, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Kale & Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Chris Hatfield with us from Sox Prospects, SoxProspects.com. And we talked about Seydon Rafaela and his big contract awarded to him by the Red Sox early this season. How about Willier Abreu? I mean, we did see him a little last year, but he really has made a significant impact this season.
Well, it's funny, Ken. You know, we were just talking about not reading too much into an early season sample size. Here's Exhibit A, right? I mean, Abreu in the first couple weeks of the season looked like a guy that may not stick around very long in the majors. Not forever, but, you know, for this season at least. And now you're batting him top four in the lineup. A guy who can really go in there, put in a great at-bat, play a solid corner outfield defensively, just showing out for this team. And it's kind of crazy to think that the Red Sox got him as well as Emmanuel Valdez, whatever you think of him, for 2 months of Christian Vasquez. You know, we all like to kind of, you know, dunk on Heim Bloom a little bit these days, it seems like. But that was an easy win for the Red Sox right there. So, you know, Abreu, a guy who just kind of quietly played well in Worcester last year and did all the little things right and came up and played fairly well and did all the little things, and now here he is at the majors, you know, series MVP a couple times maybe in the past few weeks, a guy who's really been dependable since he kind of turned a corner, getting every day at bats. And that's why I really didn't kind of understand, you know, some of why he wasn't really playing a ton early in the year, and why we were, when Trevor Story went down on our podcast, we were immediately saying, move Rafaela to short, get Abreu every day at bat, get O'Neill in the lineup every day, get Jaron Duran in the lineup every day. It just kind of works out well that way. I'm very interested to see what happens with this outfield, though, because, you know, you've got Roman Anthony coming down the pike a little bit. You know, O'Neill's gone next year, but presumably you want Rafaela in center. You know, you've already got Rafaela, Duran, Abreu, you've got Anthony coming. Something's going to have to give here, so It'll be interesting to see how the Red Sox play this. You know, is Duran the one they move? Is Abreu the one they move? Doesn't have to happen soon, but something there may be building value for one or maybe even both of them, depending on how they want to play it. I'm very curious what Abreu's role is going to be with the team long term. Love to see him stick around, but a guy you could get something that may be valuable for.
But, yeah, he has played the heck out of right field. I mean, this guy has been fantastic in the field. Forget about the 8 straight games with RBIs. He's been incredible in the outfield, I think.
Well, and especially when you play at Fenway Park, that's so important.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we've seen, you know, back when I hate to keep going there, but, you know, to see what Mookie Betts did out there in right field when you had Jackie Bradley in center. It's so important for this team, and it's good to see that they really focus on that and prioritize it, especially with some of the issues they've had early in the year. At least in the outfield, they're definitely looking at that as important, and that's what this defensive alignment that they've got right now is really great at. I mean, I love Jaron Duran in left, you know, when they've got Rafael in center. I'm fine with him in center. With Tyler O'Neill can go get it, too.
Yeah.
So it's clearly something they're focusing on, especially. It's not like Masataka Yoshida was that bad in left. Like, he wasn't great, but you know, the fact that they're not even letting him see left field except in emergency situations shows they're focused on it. And Abreu is a great example of the type of skill set they're really prioritizing out there.
No, we haven't talked a whole lot about pitching except for the fact that you mentioned that Wilkerman Gonzalez had a tough start at Portland. He's currently ranked as the 8th prospect in the organization. How about Richard Fitz? What do we know about him, a guy that the Red Sox got in the Alex Verdugo trade with the Yankees?
It seems like it was a nice get, Ken, you know, and it's interesting to see what Craig Breslow is going to do now that he's in charge in terms of focusing on player acquisition in the minors, perhaps a little bit more on pitching. We saw that with two of the trades of acquiring Richard Fitz in the Alex Verdugo deal and acquiring a guy by the name of David Sandlin in exchange for John Schreiber, which I think was just pure highway robbery of the Kansas City Royals. You know, what will they do in the draft, et cetera. But Fitz is a guy who I think we're going to see in the majors this year, perhaps almost by necessity, especially if this injury trend keeps up. He is kind of the next guy up, although he's not on the 40-man. 24-year-old that they got from the Yankees. He was a 2021 sixth-round pick out of Auburn. A big boy. I mean, he's listed at 6'3", 230. He might be 6'4", honestly. I was standing near him in camp. I'm 6'3". He was bigger than me. Has had some struggles this year a little bit to start the year in Worcester, but, you know, April in Worcester and Portland, I mean, that's the other thing I didn't even mention. You know, cold weather with guys, I'm not worried about too much. I know one of his early starts, I think it might have been his first start, was just one of those, you know, 40, 50-degree days that you just kind of throw everything out the window. You know, you just have no feel on days like that. But he's got 17 Ks and 19 and a third. I think we'll see that tick up. Not really walking anyone, which is good. You know, just 5 walks in that time. So the question with Fitz, he's almost certainly a major league arm. The question is third pitch and just seeing whether the bullpen or starting is going to be his best fit. You know, his fastball is potential above average pitch. His slider is a potential above average pitch. The question is the changeup. You know, it's maybe fringy right now. He's really focused in interviews on improving that pitch, and I think he knows how important that is to his future. I mean, a guy that, you know, look at the major league roster. Tanner Houck has turned a corner because of that third pitch, the splitter. I mean, that's the difference, right? You have to have 3 pitches to succeed as a major league starting pitcher unless you've got 2, you know, double plus or better pitches and you know, pinpoint command or something like that. So he knows that that's important for him, and we're seeing him focusing on that maybe in starts. I think he's going to continue working on that with the development staff this year. We're seeing what the Andrew Bailey program is doing.
Yeah.
The guys at the major league level, very, very interested to see what happens with Andrew Bailey and Justin Willard, their new minor league pitching development head, do with Fitz in the AAA level. And I'm going to be interested to see how he continues improving as the season warms up a little bit. Like I said, he's the next guy up, so we'll see him at some point this year. Probably making some spot starts, and I'm interested to see how that development goes.
Yeah, no doubt. We're seeing, as you mentioned, the great improvement from Tanner Houck this year thus far, and Carter Crawford has come a long way as well.
Yeah, and it's great to see for guys like that, and it's you know, it's so funny. Ian Kundle from our website had a great piece on our news page this offseason that I highly suggest folks check out. The Red Sox pitching development has been an issue for a while. Right, this is no secret. They just really haven't developed many starting pitchers in years. And in the past 6 years, the Red Sox have invested the least amount of money in acquiring amateur pitching talent of anyone in the game. Now, to be clear, that's not them being cheap. It's the money was focused more on hitters, right? It was an allocation question, not an amount of money question. And I think, you know, if you don't give your player development staff the best clay to work with, you're not going to get the nicest jars, right? And I think that's what we were seeing. Tanner Houck blowing up, that's your former first-round pick right there, and it kind of proves the point. You really need, you know, top-notch talent to be able to develop them into top-notch pitchers. As for Crawford, I mean, we knew the guy had a great fastball that just had all the attributes you're looking for at the major league level. He's working in that curve and that cutter, and I think a lot of what we're seeing with these guys at the major league level is the use of their pitch mix. We're seeing guys completely change the way they use their pitches and how much. Some guys are almost completely scrapping their four-seam fastball. Brian Baio is an example of that. I think Andrew Bailey's really working with these guys on what pitches they throw and how to throw them are going to work best for them. And that's something that they've lacked for a while, and it's been great to see that improvement across the board. I'll be honest, as a Tanner Houck fantasy owner, I'm pretty pumped about it.
There you go. Boy, you really picked a good one, man. Yeah. I hear you. Chris Hatfield, the time always flies by much too quickly, always fascinating. How can people get your podcast?
I appreciate it. Yeah, we're on any podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any other podcatcher that you've got. We're on it, SoxProspects.com podcast. We're out there. Also, we link it all the time on our news page as well at news.soxprospects.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it now. I'm at SP Chris Hatfield. The site is at SoxProspects.
And SoxProspects.com. Great site. The rankings are going to be changing quickly. And Chris, always a pleasure. Hope to have you back soon.
Always a pleasure here, too, Ken. Thanks so much.
All right. Chris Hatfield, SoxProspects.com. Back with more after these words. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back, Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday morning in time for our monthly visit with the New Hampshire Department of Safety and a couple of guests in the studio on this Tuesday morning. We have the director of the DMV. That would be John Marasco. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ken. Thanks so much for having us this morning.
And the deputy director at DMV, Janet Bouchard. Janet, great to have you here
today. Good morning. Thank you.
And we have a lot to talk about, a lot to cover, and I think there are a lot of things that people don't know about the DMV. That would be my best guess, that people think, oh, you just have to go wait in line at DMV to get your, you know, your car, just the car's registered. But there's a lot more to it than that.
There is, Ken, and thank you for highlighting that. The DMV is a very proud organization, and we are so focused on providing the gold standard and customer service day in and day out. And give all the credit to our hardworking employees. We have full and part-time about 270 employees at the DMV. And 14 locations through the state, you know, all the way up in Colebrook, you know, out to Keene and Dover and Epping and Salem and Nashua and, of course, here in Concord and Manchester. And our employees work so hard, and it's the focus is on licensing, on testing for licensing, on financial responsibility, those that may have had a traffic ticket that they need to deal with. You know, everything from registrations for abortion plates and working with 234 towns and cities throughout the state that help us register 1.6 million vehicles every year. You know, our title bureau produces between 350 and 400,000 titles a year. Mm. That's a lot of work, and it's a very complex operation there as well. And then, of course, all of our employees that work the counters. We have about 60 counters around the state in the 14 locations, and that equals about 400,000 face-to-face transactions every year. And the goal is to have people come in, have a wonderful experience, and, you know, if they have an appointment, get in and out within 10 minutes, go on with their day, and we'll see you again in 5 years. And, you know, we really are proud of what we do.
Right. Well, as you should be, because I grew up in Massachusetts, and people used to dread going to the DMV. But I've been in New Hampshire now a long time. I have never dreaded it. I've never had a real long wait, maybe 10 minutes in the waiting room. Would be the extent of it, because things are so streamlined these days. I mean, and on top of that, you can do so many things online as well that you were never able to do in the past.
Ken, you know your DMV. You really do. You give yourself some credit here. You're absolutely right. And, you know, with COVID, when the appointments came into play, you know, the appointments are about 60% to 40%. 60% appointments, 40% walk-ins, and so that really has allowed for, you know, a seamless process. They know when they're coming in. We encourage everybody to make an appointment. Go to the DMV website. You can make your appointment right there for a variety of different transactions. But that's really the way to do it. And then for the 40% that are walk-ins, that last minute, got to get my license renewed today because it expires later today. Of course, we make those things happen too. There'll be a little bit longer wait because we don't schedule for that. But even on the walk-ins, we're, you know, we usually can get people in and out in, you know, hopefully less than a half an hour. So we're really proud of making strides in a variety of directions.
I guess I don't need to point out that Major Marasco is no stranger to the radio. I mean, he should have a show of his own.
Thanks, Ken.
Heard you many times in the past, and you transitioned from a state police. You're in state police for, what, 25 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, 25 years, and what an honor. You know, I started my career, Ken, right here in the city of Concord, and worked for a little over 2 years for the Concord Police Department, and then 25 years with the state police, and so 27 years total, and just an honor and a privilege to be able to serve and to do so many different things and help so many people along the way. And in this position, I've been in it for a little over 2 years, and it's along the same lines. It's public service, it's public safety, it's helping people, and this job is really focused on, you know, the business side of it, if you will, of, you know, what are we doing with technology? Can we bring more technology in to make it a little bit, you know, less cumbersome for our employees? Can we make it easier for customers? We have so many initiatives and technology projects and positive things going on at the DMV that it's just, it's exciting. And every day is, there are so many wins being put on the board. So we love it.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, Janet Bouchard is here as well. And Janet, what was your path to the DMV?
Well, I was very fortunate to know Director Marasco from my prior employment, which was I was a police officer for almost 20 years.
Oh.
And I retired last year from the Hooksett Police Department as the chief. So I was honored when the opportunity came about to work with Director Marasco. I knew him from the past, and I knew how passionate he was about people, customers, and our employees. And I saw his vision for the DMV, and that's what brought me there.
Well, absolutely. And obviously, an outstanding hire.
Oh, let me tell you, Ken. Janet has brought so many different skill sets that she possesses to the DMV that's driving the organization each and every day, whether it's policy, you know, working with employees on the training front, managing a variety of different projects. You know, I'll speak to one that Janet's really been focused on, and that's down in Manchester. You know, we want all 14 locations around the state to have proper signage, to educate people. You have that small window of opportunity when people come in to offer them something that's going to benefit them until they come back to the DMV. But you also want all the locations to be nice and clean, freshly painted, you know, to have signage that when you are approaching the location, you know where it is, and when you come in, you know where to go. Documents that are available to you, so when you get to the counter, you're successful.
Right.
And Janet really, from the time she landed here, has been laser focused on that, and it's paying dividends throughout the state. So I appreciate that, Janet. Good job.
Yeah. How long have you been with DMV?
Coming up on a year. May 17th will be 1 year.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. Coming up on that anniversary day.
That's right.
So what are some of the things that you've been most proud of in your first year at DMV?
Oh, that's a good question. I think what the director had pointed out with just the improvements that we've made to our locations, certain locations, it takes a little time to get there, but we're getting there. And seeing the happiness of the employees of, you know, the results of those improvements. And also the customers. We've talked to them and said, wow, walking into Manchester's enjoyable now, you know. And I am also focused on career development and, you know, employees and making them feel comfortable and, excuse me, happy to come to work every day.
Well, always an important thing.
It is. You know, Ken, and if I could add one thing, it's
sure.
Customer experience is really at the top of the list. And, you know, one of the things that we implemented 2 years ago was I got my license backdrops. So basically, before that, you came to the DMV. We have about between 14 and 17,000 young people that are 16 and 17. They go through driver's ed, they come to the DMV, they get their license, and they do what I did with my two children. They take a photo in the parking lot or on the sidewalk, or hopefully it's not raining out. And what we have at all 14 locations now is a beautiful backdrop. Most of them are 8x8. At the top it says, I got my license, exclamation point. It's got the DMV logo scrolling across. And what that's done is allowed for young people to take the photo in front of that and then text it to their grandparents and text it to their friends and put it on their social media pages. And actually, it's taken on a life of its own, because we just found out 2 weeks ago that we won an award through AMVA, the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, international organization. And the backdrop and the social media campaign to make the DMV exciting is something that all DMVs around the country are looking at now. And in Quebec City, the third week of May, we'll receive that award.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that is terrific.
Yeah.
And you think of it really as a small thing, but it's really not. It means so much to those who receive it.
You know, Ken, it does, and I encourage everybody listening to go to the DMV Facebook page, to our Twitter feed, Instagram page, and take a look. You'll see the I Got My License photos on there, and when you see the young people smiling,
yeah.
and a lot of times, Ken, the examiner that would have taken that young person out for that driving test is in the photo, too.
Ah.
And what that does for people is, if you're nervous about coming to the DMV to take your driving test, and you see somebody that you know in a photo that was successful and has their license, and they're shaking the hand of the examiner who's also smiling, it just alleviates all that anxiety and lets you know that we want you to be successful.
Yep, absolutely. Well, we have a whole lot more to cover and a short time to get there, as they say. John Marasco is here. He is the director of the New Hampshire Division of Motor Vehicles, and Janet Bouchard, the deputy director. And we have a lot more to discuss, including an important deadline coming up in the not-too-distant future. And we'll do all that when we return. Kale & Company Live right here, WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be right back. Kale & Company Live, WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and very pleased to have in studio today the director of the New Hampshire Department of Motor Vehicles, John Marasco, and the deputy director, Janet Bouchard. And it's been a great first segment, and we move on to segment number two and some very important information for people to be aware of, John, and tell us exactly about Real ID and the deadline for getting Real ID.
Yeah, Ken, thank you so much for allowing us to have this opportunity to speak about it. So the Real ID, the deadline for it is May 7th of 2025. And before we came on, I spoke with Simone Davis. Simone Davis is the director of the Real ID program nationally, and she works for Homeland Security. And just want to check with her before I came on to see if there was anything else beyond what we already know about Real ID she would want us to highlight. And one of the things that Simone said was that that date, although in the past there have been Real ID deadlines that have been moved, Simone said this morning that May 7th of 2025 deadline, they're laser focused on having that stand. So what we're going to do is, starting with this program this morning, is really kick off a Real ID campaign that's going to go all the way up to May 7th of 2025 through social media and any other forum that we can get out there at our counters around the state to let people know, encourage people to get the real ID. The most recent numbers in New Hampshire, we're an opt-in state, which means that unlike Florida, some states where it's mandated through law, mm-hmm. if you're eligible to get the real ID, you have to get the real ID. In New Hampshire, you have a choice. You can get the federally non-compliant traditional license, or you can get the real ID. Right now in New Hampshire, we're a little over 60% of people who have opted in to get the real ID. And I can tell you, I spoke with our call center this morning, and a lot of calls that we get at the DMV, about a half a million a year, a lot of calls wow. more recently are focused on how do I get my real ID? Where does it come from? So the Real ID Act was passed by Congress in 2005. It followed the 9/11 Commission report, their recommendations to establish minimum security standards for licenses around the country. And that's why having that Real ID compliant license is going to be recognized in all 50 states, and it's going to allow you to get in with that license to any federal building. It's going to allow you to go through TSA and to get on a commercial airliner. And if you needed to, it's going to allow you to enter a nuclear power plant. For most people, you know, how will it positively affect them? It's going to be that opportunity to go through TSA. So what happens if you don't get the real ID by May 7th of 2025? Can you still fly commercially? The answer is yes. Using a passport, or if you go to the Real ID website, there's a whole host of other documents that you can provide. But really, to make it seamless, the way to do it is have the Real ID, the federally compliant license. It's going to make your life a lot easier. So we're really going to see Simone Davis from Real ID nationally. I just asked her again this morning, as I did several months ago, if we get to a point where we get 75% of the state to opt into Real ID, would you fly to New Hampshire from D.C. and participate in a press conference? And I would be grateful. Maybe Governor Sununu would be part of that. And she said she would do it. So
all right.
We're really going to push it.
Very, very good. So it's been around, as you mentioned, for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
2005 is when it became, a thing, as it were. And now, here we are in 2024. The deadline for getting Real ID is May 7th, 2025. What percentage of New Hampshire residents have Real ID at this point?
So we're at right now, for the driver license part of it, we're at 60.75, so a little over 60%. What we're going to start doing more of, and we do it now, but Janet and I were just talking about it as well before we came on, phone calls that we receive, people that come into the DMV, 400,000, like I said, a year, really encourage people when they get to the counter, get the Real ID. If you go to the New Hampshire DMV website, the documentation that you have to bring in is there. The nice thing about the Real ID is once you bring those documents in and you get the Real ID, when you renew, you're renewing the Real ID. You only have to bring the documents in one time.
Just once.
So that's a benefit.
And what does that involve? Could you expand on that, Janet? What documents you have to have? Or John, can you do that? I mean, is a passport mandatory, for example? Birth certificate?
No, it's a great question. And so what's a little different with getting the Real ID as opposed to the traditional license is there is a little bit more that you have to show, but not much. So, for instance, the first step in the process is you need one item to show proof of identity. What could that be? Well, like you said, Ken, that could be a birth certificate, certificate of naturalization or of citizenship, a valid unexpired U.S. passport. A valid unexpired permanent resident card, a valid unexpired I-94 card. So all those things are on the website, but one of those, and then step two would be to show one proof of Social Security number.
Okay.
So ideally, if you have the Social Security number, that would cover that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have your Social Security card handy, a pay stub with your Social Security number on it, a W-2 statement, a 1099. And then step three, and this is where the differential is with the traditional license versus the Real ID, is that two documents to show proof of New Hampshire residency. And that can be your currently valid, unexpired New Hampshire driver's license, a title application that was prepared by the town or the city, a valid New Hampshire vehicle registration, and many, many others that are on there. So again, I encourage people to go to the DMV website. We issue real IDs every day. Mm-hmm. The documentation is not that lofty. Once you get it, you don't have to worry about it again, and you'll be glad you got it. So
the process is not as difficult as one would think. Now, Janet, I know you came in carrying a poster of some kind,
I
have no idea what it is. I want you to unfold it here and hold it up to camera three. There you go. There you go. All right. It says, "Reach new heights. Get your real ID." There it is, right there. Real ID is required for flying domestically. And as John mentioned, entry into federal facilities as well. So it's a simple process. Everybody should have one. It's not difficult at all, and you have just over a year to do it.
That's right, Ken. Yeah.
If I could add too, Ken, one of the things that I ran into, which I find some people are a little nervous about, is if your name has changed due mm-hmm. to marriage or
right.
so forth, if you've taken
right.
your partner's last name. I had to do that when I got my real ID, and at first I was confused because I said, well, I provided my marriage license when I did get married mm-hmm. and so forth. But then I understood you have to provide your marriage license. Well, my mom last year renewed her license and wanted to get her real ID, and she said, her and my dad have been married 53 years, you know, so she said, how am I going to get my marriage license? So it was actually very simple. I went to the City Hall in Manchester, requested it, and they went in the archives, and even though it had been, you know, that many years
right.
ago that they'd been married, she was able to easily get her marriage license and get a real ID. So don't let that intimidate people, you know,
no,
either.
It's easier to get your birth certificate than people would think.
It's true.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, absolutely. So that being said, John, what else is happening at DMV?
Well, you know, just to finish up too on the Real ID, Ken,
yeah,
we are going to have a press conference that's scheduled at Manchester Airport on May 7th,
okay.
Next week. That's going to be with the airport director, Ted Kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
Really thank Ted for the opportunity to be down there, as well as TSA. And, you know, we're going to market this and do it right there where it's going to be most impactful to people. So we're looking forward to that. Some of the things we have going on at the DMV is we're working through licenses. We have a project going on right now to with a new vendor that's coming in that's going to produce our licenses right towards the end of this year, right after the first of the year. And Janet's the project manager on that. And, you know, when I spoke in the beginning, Ken, about the federal government establishing minimum security standards for driver licenses, that's a big part of this project. There are certain milestones that have to be met for a state to have a compliant driver's license in general. And so we're working through that. We also have a project going on right now for e-title and e-lien. So what does that mean? It means that hopefully within the next 12 months, the DMV for the first time ever is going to be in a position to receive title applications and deal with lien information from lending institutions, doing that remotely, doing that through technology. And that's going to cut back on the paper. It's going to improve the efficiency of the process. So we have that going on. We're working with the driver's ed community to improve driver's ed as best we can, to cut down on wait times, reduce costs, increase the number of instructors that are coming through driver's ed. The DMV has a role in that. We've got, you know, a lot of internal initiatives going on to make sure our employees are enjoying their job day in and day out. But, Ken, I would love to come back and talk to you
absolutely.
About so many more things.
We know this is a motorcycle state, and I know you have some motorcycle safety courses that go on at DMV as well. And I think we should get into that at a future date. But certainly a lot of things to talk about when it comes to DMV. It's not your grandfather's DMV
That's
anymore.
That's a perfect way to say it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes, it's a new high-flying DMV.
Especially with John Marasco and Janet Bouchard on board here in New Hampshire. We're in good hands with you guys, and we really appreciate you coming in today. You will be back.
Thank you.
You will be back,
Thank
both
you,
of you. Thanks for gracing our studios here today, and I hope you do in the not-too-distant future once again. That'll do it for this edition of Kale and Company right here on WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And don't forget to always look on the bright side of life. Have a great Tuesday, everyone.